welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at the same number. On the line, Dr. Robert Craig, Executive Director of Citizen Action. Good morning, Dr. Craig. How are you doing?
Good morning, Earl. I guess I'd say it's the end of the world as we know it, and I feel fine.
My good friend Sandy Williams is joining us today. I want to introduce you guys to one another. I think a great fit.
Well, good to meet you. I don't think I'll recognize you on the street after this introduction, but unless we talk to one another.
Well, it's slightly better than email introduction. At least we can hear each other.
Yeah. So, Dr. Craig, the invasion is underway, and what are your thoughts?
Well, I mean, it's an extremely dangerous situation. This might fit the category of this is how the world ends. In other words, if you look at all the scenarios during the Cold War of how a nuclear war might happen, how it might be accidental, how escalation might occur, this has those markings, and you have the madman, Vladimir Putin. And frankly, you have a Ukrainian president, Volodymyr Zelensky, who has become a world hero very quickly and done the thing he needs to do to give Ukraine a fighting chance, but also, quite frankly, if you just take a step back, independent of the heroic fight of the Ukrainian people, it creates a context where there's a lot more world pressure on Russia and unity, and that could either, hopefully, in the best case, stand Putin down, but in the worst case, actually escalate beyond Ukraine. And we're talking about nuclear powers here, and NATO is, the next countries over are NATO, and we have a solid treaty that if they're attacked, we are in the war. So I think really, I mean, there's a lot we could say about it, but Earl and Sandy, but I would just say that it's good that we did rapidly a lot of economic sanctions. I think we need to do more. I do think it needs to be a peaceful resolution based on what I just said. And I think they've held off on an oil embargo, and they're concerned about, you know, impact on Europe, impact on, say, American politics, where inflation, and especially inflation and gas prices, is already a big political issue, harming President Biden's approval ratings. I'm sorry, I think, and this is the one thing that was, I wish I'd seen in the State of the Union, I think we need to move to a sense of better sense of self-sacrifice. I mean, people put up with a lot to win World War II, but now we've kind of created a public, and it's been nurtured by by politicians that just wants things and is expected never to sacrifice, and is very upset if they have to put a cloth mask on their face or pay higher energy prices in order to protect the world and protect Ukraine from an aggressive nuclear power and an authoritarian danger to the region and the world.
Well, Doctor, I think you've recited what is the view of many experts about, for instance, the oil embargo that we ought to be putting on Russian oil. However, I was speaking before you got on of the history behind what's happened when we impose extreme economic sanctions on an economic player and a world player and a militarized world player in the past, Japan before World War II, even Germany before World War II, and also the geopolitical realities. We did not bring Ukraine into NATO, and although it was talked about, and now that even though we haven't brought them in, and this is happening, we have no intention of putting boots on the ground in Ukraine, and neither does any other country in Europe apparently. So that tells me that the geopolitical interests in Ukraine don't rise to the level of sustaining the kind of potential risks and national treasure that would need to be devoted to defending a country. And I think the reason for that is that Ukraine, kind of from a realistic standpoint, belongs into hegemony with Russia, and it always has been part of at least a Slavic, if not a Romanov based kind of hegemony and has rarely had any moment of independence. I'm not agreeing with Vladimir Putin's concept that because it doesn't have a history of independence, it doesn't have a right to be a free and independent country. But we've armed it, and we've given it the Dutch courage to sort of stand up to Russia in a way that it hasn't signed treaties with Russia that would otherwise be expected to be signed in a situation in which there was clear hegemony. We now are cheering them on and embracing their bravery, but we aren't really willing to do the things that will allow them to win this fight. And even with the broad sanctions you're talking about, you're really just trying to measure the will of Vladimir Putin to finish this battle. And he's given every reason to believe that he will. Now, of course, he has to give that reason to believe in, as a matter of negotiation. But my outlook on this is that we're just fighting off an inevitable, and we're creating a history of sanctions that will continue to be imposed, because with the inevitable, I think we'll end up with a situation much like we did in the Donbas region of Ukraine, where we continued the sanctions because what we felt to be the improper conduct of Russia was continuing. And there will be some form of occupation or other involvement by Russia in Ukraine politics, which would probably require, as a matter of principle, that we continue these sanctions.
Dr. Craig?
Very rich series of thoughts, and you may well be right, and analysis. I'm more optimistic, though I think your pessimism may be borne out. I guess we're before a major, you know, sports game, and who can really tell whose prediction will turn out correct? I would say this, and I'm not predicting a good outcome. I'm just saying I'm more hopeful that we can find one. And that is, first of all, I mean, my first degree is in international relations. My analysis would be that interests are not static. Sometimes foreign policy scholars make interests some hard, knowable, objective thing. There's a perception of interests, and they change. And I think the sense of where Ukraine fits into the European interest or the American interest is in flux. I think that I think there are real limits to sanctions, but the alternatives are worse, right? Certainly, I don't hear you, Sandy, talking about no-fly zones or escalating the conflict in that way. And it's a very different world economy, a much more integrated economy than it was in the 1930s. The ability to shut down Russian currency and Russian bank access to the whole banking system entirely, and perhaps they shut down since they were some have called this country Russia, you know, a country attached to a gas station. It's incredibly dependent on gas. And so what could you do, and what else could you do? I'm not claiming to know every lever, but we should be using every single peaceful lever. And it's not only backing Putin down, it's potentially creating domestic conditions where the Russian people can actually change the dynamic and change either remove Putin or make him focus on holding on to power rather than on Ukraine. I'm not saying those things will happen, but we've got to try to make them happen. And I would just say this, you know, an energy sanction, the way it's being talked about, there's some people talking more broadly. It tends to be temporary, and we have some pay. I mean, that's how it's conceived. Since we need to do a transition away from fossil fuel altogether to save human civilization, and we're on a deadline where we need to get half there, right there by 2030, or we'll have runaway climate change that creates death worse than anything imaginable in all the history of humanity. This would be an opportunity to do a Manhattan-style project between all of the developed countries where we speed that up. And then Russia is greatly diminished even as a viable country and economy, quite frankly, and Putin's system is no longer viable. And just the threat of that, starting to do that, could be a lot of leverage, and it could affect the domestic situation for Putin. So I'm not saying all the things are going to happen. I think we have agency. We need to try to make them happen. But you may well be right. But I don't think it's time yet to essentially admit defeat. But it is very hard to get a good outcome. I couldn't agree more.
Well, I wasn't suggesting we admit defeat. I just think we have to look at realities. One of the things I talked about before you called in was the fact that the sanctions were imposing, for instance, the freezing of central bank assets, held some danger in the future with respect to the view of the value of foreign currencies and whether a country with money in the bank and its central bank reserves would view it as being safe if it was held in, for instance, U.S. dollars or other kinds of investments that could be frozen. One of the other huge central banks is China, obviously, and China, you have to look at a country who might take the view that they might run afoul of U.S. and Western Europe views of what is appropriate behavior and have sanctions, so that we might be setting in motion wheels that not next year, but sometime in the foreseeable future would diminish the value of the dollar as the world currency, could elevate the value of cryptocurrencies or Chinese currencies. I mean, I think all these things that we do that are in as alternatives to warfare are not benign and are not without potential damage to ourselves and to the world economy.
Oh, I agree. I think we need to take calculated risks. And I don't have all the facts on that. You're raising good points about disadvantages of certain approaches. I'm not fixated on a certain approach. I'm saying we need, you know, a full court press here, to use a basketball analogy. See, there's a doctrine that's still dominant in international relations where called realism, which is claimed over the decades since the beginning of the Cold War to have a scientific grasp on realities. But it did things like told us, it said the reality was we couldn't give up Vietnam or it would cause the spread of communism worldwide, which was an absurd proposition, or told President Carter that the Afghanistan invasion by Soviet Union was part of a new attempt to take over the whole world in the Middle East when it was actually a dying regime that was that was economic basket case. And so I'm just saying that I don't want to, I'm not saying there aren't realities. I'm saying we need to understand that we shouldn't assume they're settled, and we shouldn't assume that conventional wisdom as to what they are is correct. But that doesn't mean that they're not either. I'm not saying therefore I can wipe the slate clean and change the world. I would call for a higher realism where we actually think about our assumptions, but also we're realistic about it in terms of making calculations as to what is likely to lead to the best result and testing them out and then changing when they don't work out. But I do think we have options here. And I think Vladimir Zelensky and the brave Ukrainian people, this is soft power, have changed the whole world dynamic.
So, Dr. Craig, we've got to go to a break. We'll be right back. Dr. Robert Craig is on the line and Sandy Williams in the studio. We'll be right back.